This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World Resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com, as well as dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer. Hi, this is Len Testa, and you're back for another episode of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. Today, Jim and I are going to be walking through New Orleans Square in Disneyland. We're on location. You can hear the crowds in the background. I'd like to welcome Jim back to the show. Jim, how's it going?
It's going great. I mean, ooh, beignets!
So we just finished up in the last episode talking about Adventureland and what Walt was going for with that and how the Jungle Cruise came to be and sort of the transition from the time the park opened for certain attractions like the Swiss Family Treehouse and Tarzan's Treehouse. Now we're walking into New Orleans Square. Was New Orleans Square part of the opening of Disneyland, Jim?
Nope. There was a little sort of addendum to Frontierland, the Chicken Plantation restaurant that was supposed to be themed to be, sort of a touch of New Orleans. But, you know, it wasn't a full-blown land. What's kind of interesting is Walt always wanted to do something with pirates. And in fact, they actually began construction of a pirate attraction. It was called Rogues Gallery. But it was going to be sort of a standalone building.
Really? And this was for the park?
Well, actually, we're going to have to back up the truck here. Let's grab a seat.
We're grabbing a seat. Oh, so we know it's serious.
You see, the very first pirate attraction that Disney was going to do wasn't for Disneyland. It was actually for Steamboat Square. It was an indoor theme park that Walt Disney was going to build in St. Louis.
Okay.
And in fact, this was known at that point as the Jean Lafitte ride.
Jean Lafitte.
The interesting thing is it had bits and pieces of what turned up in the Disneyland ride. I mean, it was set in a building. So put your boat in order to get the show scenes. You loaded on the first floor. You went down to the basement. You floated through show scenes, and then they moved you up to the second floor for unload.
Huh. So that's a lot. That element survived.
Yeah, but this was again more. It was more of a history-based park. They were celebrating Jean Lafitte. You know, the great pirate of the Mississippi River. Because again, this is St. Louis. That was one of the driving themes of the, you know, literally the steamboats that ran up the Mississippi. But at the same time, here's Walt, you know, recognizing that, you know, New Orleans is so colorful and the pirates are so amazing. So what he decides to do is he's going to build a walkthrough because this is the problem. Audio animatronics really aren't where they need to be yet.
Okay. What year is this about?
This is, I want to say, 60, 61. And okay. Walt is just beginning. In fact, the very first time Walt actually uses the term audio animatronics was in the expansion of what was then known as the Mine Train through Nature's Wonderland. Again, plussing. They added a bear country. They added mountain areas with mountain goats and that sort of thing. But these are very limited movement creatures. And face it, pulling off a human being is difficult. I mean, that's one of the reasons, for example, we talked earlier about how Liberty Street was going to be one of the expansion areas off of Main Street. But one of the things that perpetually held it up was because they were going to do a version of the Hall of Presidents, but it was going to be waxworks. It was going to be limited movement. And Walt felt it was undignified for the presidents of the United States to be,
to look like a
Lincoln smash, you know, just sort of like, it had to have life-like movement. It had to be believable. And more to the point, Rogues Gallery was going to be sort of the same thing. I mean, the idea was that you were going to walk through this, step down into this basement area of New Orleans Square and walk through 15 different vignettes that would, once you got in front of them, would come to life.
Okay.
But again, with limited movement and with lighting effects, and you'd hear a story about a particular famous pirate. And Mark Davis did months and months of work on this. In fact, there's some amazing tableaus out there that he created these wonderful dramatic scenes. And Walt was like, okay, let's get started. So they literally, they start construction of Rogues Gallery, which means that they dig a basement. They go down 10 feet deep in this corner of Frontierland, and the structural steel goes into place. And this is 62, 63.
And at this point, it's still going to be a walk-through attraction.
Walk-through attraction.
15 rooms, walk-through.
Okay. And suddenly construction stops because Walt has committed to doing four different attractions for the 64 World's Fair.
And this is 62, so he's got to essentially pull everybody.
So everybody's pulled, and so it stands empty now for the next 3 years. In fact, Bruce Gordon used to tell the stories as a kid. I mean, nobody was more Disney crazy than Bruce. I mean, Bruce, for example, built a complete diorama of the Jungle Cruise in his garage with Plaster Paris. And
wow.
To make it authentic, he actually snuck a milk carton into the park under his coat and took genuine Jungle Cruise water out of the attraction and brought it home.
Wow.
So,
riding home on the bus, what's his explanation for that?
Well, more to the point, it's like, what has gone wrong with this milk?
Yeah.
You know, this horrible grain, almost cheese.
I'm taking this back.
Anyway, so Bruce would come, you know, when his family would visit, he would climb to the top of the Swiss Family Treehouse and peer down into the construction. Is anything going on? It's like, no, nothing is going on. But actually, something really, really significant is going on. Walt is in New York, and he's perfecting new ride systems. I mean, for example, the boat system for Small World.
Right.
Walt is like, oh my God, it's pirates, it's boats. It's like, we solved the problem of limited movement. I mean, you know, look, if you're moving past, you don't notice that we only have 30 seconds of animation.
Yeah.
You know, it's so he comes back and it's like,
yeah, boys, have I got an idea for you?
But that's
boat rides.
And it's like, Walt, it's not going to fit in the little cellar hole we have. It's like, okay, fine, we're going outside the berm. And that was the plan. So they literally end up, you know, and in fact, again, borrowing from the Lewis and Clark idea of going down into the basement, you know, they now build a second basement on the other side of the train system. And now you have this great expanded turf, and they go forward and they build Pirates of the Caribbean. And in fact, this is kind of where the story of Disneyland gets sad, because this is Walt during a period when really the only way you hold his attention is if you're doing something different. Walt really now is more focused on Florida. And to be honest, even when they were talking about Florida, he's not all that excited about the Magic Kingdom. He's excited about Epcot, the city. So the one way you get him excited is you do something like this, where it's a whole different type of storytelling. And in fact, that's the other thing that he, you know, was really paying a lot of attention to during the same period was Haunted Mansion, which, again, same thing. That was originally designed to be a walkthrough attraction. In fact, the building, the exterior building for Haunted Mansion was built and standing as early as 61. And in fact, that there's a famous sign that used to hang outside of it that was written by Marty Sklar, where it was, we're looking for volunteers. Send your resume to Ghost Relations. But, you know, so you had, literally, you had this empty building standing there because they were, in that version, I mean, you walk through the mansion, you were led by a guide, and in fact, one of the great gags of it, and I still kind of miss this, I wish they'd done it, when you moved from room to room, there was some sort of, you know, the Harry the Monster, and that the guide would literally be talking, and you'd see a panel slide open behind the guide, and this hand would come out, you know, but they had choreographed it so at every, you know, just moment, the guide would step away or go to tie a shoe or that sort of, the hand would swoop and almost get him. And again, but this was one of these rides where they fought and fought and fought about, well, what is it? Is it funny? Is it scary? Mm-hmm. They just couldn't get a sense. In fact, when Walt died, you know, that's why you've kind of got the attraction you've got now, where it's funny, scary. It starts off scary and goes funny at the end, because you had Claude Coates design the first half of the ride, and you had Mark Davis design the last part of it. And again, one of the only ways...
Really? So two different people designed... Because really, if you think about it, there is sort of a segue halfway through where you
absolutely.
Go from sort of like, I wouldn't say photorealistic, but a much more... could definitely fit in a home. You would see like the furnishings where it's sort of a caricature of the mm-hmm. stuff that you would normally find at home. But then the second half of the ride... it's completely different. It's much more fantastic.
Well, you know, it's a notion of that from Clyde Coates basically did everything leading up to Madame Leota, and then literally you summon the spirits, and that's Mark Davis going forward.
Huh.
I mean, Mark, you know, Claude, don't get me wrong, Claude created some of the set pieces, you know, that sort of thing, but all of the atmospherics, all of the stuff that's...
the initial part of the ride.
That's Claude.
Really?
You know, but yeah, again, think about it. You come to, if you're here in the 1960s, you come to this park where, all right, when's the Haunted Mansion going to open? We don't know. You know, what's the deal with the open pit here? We don't know. You know, but that was the thing. This was Walt's part. What you built, what you did, was because of Walt Disney.
One guy had to approve it.
One guy had to approve it. So
we have other stuff in New Orleans Square. We've got restaurants, Cafe Orleans. Yep. We've got some shops back there. What was, and we've got a train station too. Was the train station always going to be like the first stop for Walt? That was always planned.
You know, this was dropped in. This was all Frontierland up until they decided. I mean, Frontierland actually used to extend all the way back to Splash Mountain. They had, for example, an authentic Indian village back there where you could go see Indian dance and that sort of thing. It was only late in the game. It was, you know, we're talking early 60s there, but it's okay. Frontierland is now Frontierland and New Orleans Square. And then suddenly...
They carved out Critter Country eventually.
Yeah.
Really?
You know, it just... Because, again, the whole notion was it occupied so much turf. And it was the notion of what stories can we tell here. In fact, you know, well into the 70s and 80s, they were still looking at this side of the park about what they could do. One of my favorite little things that they were going to do is that as they were developing Epcot, you know, they wanted to bring some of this stuff to Florida or to California, but they couldn't figure out how to do it. And
Epcot stuff. Okay, all right.
And what they actually decided they were going to do was World Showcase Land. And it was...
I'm giving Jim the puzzled look.
They actually were going to build tunnels under the train tracks here in New Orleans Square. And you went under the tunnels and you came up backstage. And here you had a German beer garden. You had an English music hall. You had... And we're talking... This was actually developed 75, 76. I mean...
Wow.
You know, even predating Epcot. But it was the notion of, look at the stuff we're doing. It's really good. Let's bring it to California. But it's this little triangle-shaped land, and you would actually come up, you know, back in, you know, because they figured New Orleans is influenced by Paris, so, you know, what better way to go into a full version of Paris?
Yeah, you could sort of do the transition, right?
Absolutely.
And so you'd go, so we're almost by the train station right now. You would go under where the train station is, mm-hmm. like a tunnel, a walking tunnel, like for Toontown? Like
yeah,
Toontown's.
That's it exactly.
You know. And then you end up on the other side, and it's... World Showcase.
Yeah, and again, just the notion of you found a way to, and again, that's, you got to remember, during the 70s, this was this weird period in Disney history where they just, so much work was being done in Florida. There was just this notion of these parks need some TLC. We need big attractions. You know, and it's not a coincidence that, you know, the last two big things that really went into the park were things that Walt himself, you know, whether it was Pirates of the Caribbean or, you know, Haunted Mansion. But those were, Walt had already put those going forward. But now it was a question of, well, what else?
Yeah.
You know, and that was the other thing. I mean, let's be honest here. The Walt Disney Company had a brilliant man at the top and some very talented lieutenants below him. They, you know, these were the people Walt could turn to and say, do this. And absolutely, Walt, I'll figure out a way. But they weren't necessarily the big idea men like Walt. And that's honestly why the company floundered, you know, for much of the 70s and the 80s. Because it's like, they didn't have an idea guy at the top. So, but anyway, God, that's a happy story.
That's right. So we're going to walk from New Orleans Square over to Critter Country. And I didn't know Critter Country was actually carved out of Frontierland. But the interesting thing about that is that Frontierland, you've been to Disneyland Paris?
Yep.
Frontierland is huge in Disneyland Paris. So the idea, I guess, does Disney always start off with a large Frontierland in its parks and then sort of cut back?
Well, I hate to say it, but with Disneyland Paris, the notion there was that, you know, it's not even Disney's version of the West. It was more the Clint Eastwood, Sierra Leone, you know.
The Italian spaghetti western.
That's it, exactly. So it needed to be that much bigger scale. But even then, it's like, well, how do you put, you know, these attractions into a big Frontierland? I mean, you think about it. Here, Haunted Mansion is, you know, in New Orleans Square. At Walt Disney World, it's in Liberty Square.
Right.
If you go over to Euro Disneyland...
It's in Boot Hill. It's in Frontierland.
Frontierland. If you go to Tokyo, it's at Fantasyland.
Okay.
So, I mean, you move it around. Oh, we've got the Columbia here.
All right. You know, what land is the Columbia in?
Well, Columbia is actually in its own little special land. This is Fowler Harbor.
What's it called?
Fowler Harbor, named after...
Admiral Joe?
Admiral Joe Fowler, who, again... you have to pause here for a moment to tell the story of the actual making of the Rivers of America.
You mean it hasn't always existed in the middle of Disneyland and they just built up around it?
Yeah, go figure. Huh. No, they carved out the Rivers of America, and so they go to fill it, and they pour the water in it, and it all immediately disappears.
Don't!
You know, and they discovered, again, the soil that used to be orchards is far too porous, so they have to go out now. And again, this is one of the reasons why Disneyland went from costing $7 million to $9 million to $11 million to the final $17.5 million. In fact, if the stories are true, it was about a month after the park opened that somebody found a roll-top desk that was filled with bills that nobody had seen before. Just was the nurse, just shove them in there, and we'll figure that out once the park's open. But they had to, for the Rivers of America, they had to go out and buy tons of clay to line the river. And more to the point, when Walt built his, down at Long Beach, they built the keel of the Mark Twain and then brought it over here and built the Mark Twain in place. And it was like, Walt, it's a boat. We're going to need a dry dock.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, come on, let's spend money on attractions. And it's like, Walt, no, you have to maintain a boat.
You have to bring the boat up here. I have to service the keel. The ride system.
So this is where Joe built the area for the Mark Twain. And Walt's less than kind name for it was, this is Joe's ditch. All right. that's all right, fine. Joe needs his ditch to put his stupid boat in. All right, fine. Whereas, over time, this became known as Fowler Harbor. And a redo during the 80s or thereabouts, they actually created the harbor, the Fowler Harbor area. There's, in fact, that's one of the places where you used to be able to go to get McDonald's French fries.
Oh, funny.
Back when they had the Dill. And of course, looking out of the Rivers of America, I mean, one of the big attractions for New Orleans Square is Fantasmic. And that's one of those attractions that's got a fascinating history as well. Because
people stand in New Orleans Square to watch Fantasmic.
Four hours ahead of time. They will just grab their turf and sit down. This nighttime show actually, again, dated back to 72, 73. They knew they were doing nighttime jazz concerts out here, special events on a seasonal basis where they float a stage out. They knew this was a great performance space, but they were trying to figure out what to do. And now to jump ahead to 83, 84, when Disney spent all that money and redid Fantasyland. I mean, all of the Fantasyland rides you see now are second generation. They flattened that side of the park and started over.
Really?
Yeah. We'll get to that another podcast, folks. But for the opening of the park, what they did for the new version of Fantasyland, they created this elaborate opening ceremony where, they'd lower the bridge at the newly repainted castle, and Prince Philip would come out on his horse, and they had this giant inflatable of the dragon, Maleficent, which would rise up behind the castle, and Mickey and Prince Philip would take it out, and it would then sink down below, and they'd open the park open. But there were so many people who wanted to see the new fantasy thing. They did the show 17 different times. And every time people came away, it's like, wow, that's amazing. It's a shame. Oh, if you could only do that in the park for the real guests.
Have the balloon blow up.
And that's where that show came from. In fact, I mean, doesn't it strike you a little unusual that the Melissa the Dragon rises up out of Tom Sawyer's Island?
I had never thought of it before that.
There you go. No, this is a lift of that show. And just brought it over here and mashing together the opening ceremony of the new Fantasyland with the nighttime jazz concerts, that they used to do, and with the floating stages, and that's where this show came from.
Well, it's kind of interesting because we're standing in this space right now, so we're in sort of the border between New Orleans Square and Critter Country. We're looking over Tom Sawyer Island. You can see sort of the Matterhorn in the far distance. But the thing you notice about this space is it's the walkway curves all the way around the Rivers of America, all the way back to where Frontierland is. And really, if you're going to put 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 thousand people here, it's really the space to do it, because the walkways essentially become the standing area during the show.
Though that said, though, that the...
Where else in the park would you do it?
Well, that is the obvious question. But more to the point, when they put the show in 92, huge success right out of the gate, the fall of 92, they shut down basically the entire promenade here on New Orleans Square. And actually, you notice how there are three-tiered levels of walkway.
That's right, yeah. So you've got the water, then you've got one tier of a walkway, then you've got another sort of middle tier, and then for New Orleans Square, you've got a third.
And that was all put in to create ease of use.
Was it always there?
No, this was put in deliberately to facilitate presenting the show at night. That now, if you stood... Face it, when it was done... without the added level of dimension, the people who are standing, 100 people back,
wouldn't see anything.
I see the top of Mickey's ears. But there's a lot of stuff they did like that. I mean, for example, the bridge that goes over the entrance of Pirates of the Caribbean, that was only added in the mid-80s as well. I mean,
really?
You know, I mean, Disney is always looking at guest flow. I mean, I've got maintenance reports going back as far as the 70s and 80s where they talk about pinch points in the park. You know, literally, it's like, we have to do something about the walkway here. We have to, you know, because guests are, you know, it gets extremely clogged at parade time, or, you know, we're not getting the sales at that popcorn cart because, you know, people are struggling to get to us.
Huh.
But it's, I mean, that's the thing about Disneyland. It's a living, breathing thing that you know, they're always making tweaks to try to facilitate. I mean, in fact, it's kind of ironic that we're sitting here looking down on the Rivers of America, and what's between us and the water is the smoking area, the little smoking corral. And, you know,
they're penned off like rabbits.
Yeah, but this is what, again, think about it, that in the 1950s you could smoke anywhere.
Yeah, those were the days. On airplanes.
Yeah.
In front of children.
That's right. And now, right. You know, here they are in their veal pen.
In their veal pen.
So
we continue on into Critter Country?
Sure.
All right, great. All right, so we're going to do Critter Country for an upcoming show. For Jim Hill, this is Len Testa. You've been listening to the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you on the next show.